You are listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff.
Give me a hail, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hail, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on.
And welcome to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football, sponsored by Bad Monkey Popcorn. I'm Tim Kapper, along with Cliffy, it wasn't me, Pine. What's up?
yeah. It's just another beautiful week in the 514.
Yes. Come on. Come on. You have to tell. I'm not going to tell the story. Why did I? Come on. Come on, Shaggy. Sing it to us. Come on. No,
I told you. I've got many talents in this body, and one of them just happens to be I can sing like Shaggy.
Nice. And but, of course, your brother ratted you out on Twitter today. That was pretty funny.
Yes. At Thomas Pine, throw him a follow, why don't you? Because he got all up in his feelings about Shaggy back in the day, and I tell you, like that song, It Wasn't Me. I used to joke that I live my life by that song, and that's probably not a good thing, you know, especially if I ever want to stay in like a long lasting, meaningful relationship. But that's neither here nor there.
She saw you banging on the bedroom floor.
It wasn't me.
So, yeah.
So I did. I gotta give a shout out to the fine folks over at Two and Up podcast. They had come up with a great idea of maybe a Grey Cup karaoke. I bust that out. So I'm giving it some serious thought. I'm really thinking about it. So maybe Ottawa, and this leads perfectly into our usual segment. Get your popcorn ready.
Yes, popcorn. Show sponsor, as mentioned, is sponsored by Bad Monkey Popcorn, and as we were doing, this is week three of the Bad Monkey Popcorn taste test. I gotta get my virtual wheel ready. And like we had done last week, if you didn't know it, there's six flavors that they provided us with, and we're trying a new one each week. And like I did last week, Cliff, I took off one of the flavors that we had, which was I don't remember what it was now.
A Twister.
And I took it off, and so if we come across it, then we'll find out. We'll get spin again, and then we'll continue from there. So here we go. Without further ado, so wrong. Anyways, here we go. Let's get our spin on Bad Monkey Popcorn.
The anticipation is killing me.
Caramel.
Ooh. All right. Not just caramel, but creme brulee caramel.
Ooh, la la la. Oh, you can hear them. You can hear them in the background. They're racing to come to your house.
Oh, well, who wouldn't race to come to get this amazing popcorn?
Here we go.
But they want to try and get it from me, though. Bunch of shots of it, so.
Scissors.
Ooh, yeah. This definitely smells like creme brulee. That nice little burnt sugary smell.
Mm. Hold on. Here, it's like this. You gotta open it up and then...
Very nice. All right.
I don't think I had had this one before.
All right. Bottoms up.
Probably one of the... It's crispier than the baby girl that we had 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's Cracker Jack-ish, but not. Does that make make any sense?
No, I get that. I get a lot of that taste to it. Of course, obviously, there's no peanuts in here because Bad Monkey popcorn is completely peanut-free. Mm. No, I've had caramel. I've had caramel popcorn before, and it's obviously good. But this definitely has an extra little something to it. Like I said, that burnt sugar taste that you would normally get with a nice creme brulee.
Yeah, yeah. It, you know what?
It definitely has that.
This has my favorite ingredient out of every ingredient that I've ever had. TBHQ. Ugh, you can't get any more TBHQ than this.
Nope.
What are you eating? Consonants? I'm eating consonants right now. What are you? What? A? E? No. Can't have E because it's vowel. I like the burnt taste, so to speak. The covering's done right. What would you rate it?
Let's see if we're going to our usual football.
Yeah, 4 out of 5 footballs. I think five footballs. I think, yeah, 4 footballs.
Well, we started the first week. We did 4 footballs, and last week you bumped up to 5.
Oh,
so
did I? Oh,
you did. So, so if we're to go, we'll stay with 5 then. If
okay,
1 to 5 footballs, I would give this. I'd give this 4 because I really love that, like I said, that not just that caramel taste, but just sort of that little burnt taste to it.
Yeah.
Is really, really well done.
I like actually, because I remember I put Twister High last week because I think it was one of my faves. I'm actually going to give, I'm only going to probably give this probably a 3.5. It's not my favorite, but it has a good taste. You know, it's not just your, as you said, it's not just the normal caramel popcorn.
Now, I do like your analogy of Cracker Jack, but this is, like, whereas Cracker Jack, it's got that mass-produced taste to it, because obviously it is mass-produced. This is like almost like a better version of Cracker Jack.
I agree. And I think it has the consistency of Crunch and Munch.
Mm.
I love Crunch and Munch.
Crunch and Munch is so...
Especially their white toffee. Anyways, we're talking about a different we're talking about a different popcorn here. Oops, is that taboo? Yes. Especially in this circumstance. But I think consistency-wise of coverage, Crunch and Munch, it tastes similar to, you know, it has a Cracker Jack type of texture. But yeah, I think so. I still think it's good. Good popcorn. Good flavor. Oh. We got some interesting flavors coming up in the next couple of weeks, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I can't wait.
3 more to go. Just as a reminder, if you are looking to get some of the popcorn or you want to try it for the first time and you're an Alouettes fan, you can actually first head over to the – when you're at the games, you can go over to their kiosk over on the north side of the stadium and get your Bad Monkey on. Also, do not forget that if you are in Quebec, it is available at all local and independent food grocery stores. And across the country, in the rest of Canada, it is available at most Bed Bath & Beyonds. For more information, head over to their website at badmonkeypopcorn.com. Early week, and we're talking about Footman. You know, we did our show early last week, and it was so weird doing it. You know, but then we had games on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We obviously, having a game on a Wednesday, you went... What was it, before we get to the game itself, because you and I have a lot to talk about this damn game. What was your, give us a few highlights, and I know you had a specific highlight about the fan bus, fan game, fan train slash game, bus game, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, so one of the trips that the Alouettes were organizing this year for fans that want to go to road games was a fan bus, whereas... You would come up to Ottawa to go to see the game at TD Place. I believe it was have dinner with the players afterwards, and then pretty much everybody heads back to Montreal. Now, I had gotten word when I got to Ottawa. I wasn't on the bus, on this fan bus, but I went to the game on my own accord. When I got to Ottawa, though, I was speaking with one of the folks at the ticket office, and he informed me that... OSEG, the parent company of the Ottawa Red Blacks, inadvertently forgot to block off a section of tickets for those fans.
Uh-oh. Conspiracy.
So, Could it be? Would that possibly be the issue? But it would definitely not make bad business sense because, again, if you bought this trip, you essentially bought a ticket to the game. So the Red Blacks owed you a ticket to the game.
That's right.
So as a result, they had to sort of scramble a little bit. And lo and behold, all of the fans who attended this fan bus, whatever you want to call it, they ended up sitting in club seats.
Wow.
At the Alouettes Red Blacks game this past Wednesday. And, I mean, that's a great bonus. I mean, like, just being able to partake in all this, all these festivities and whatnot sounded pretty cool. But throw club seats on top of that? I mean, these guys made out like gangbusters. Anyone who went to this game, I mean, regardless of what you saw on the field, because unfortunately what you saw on the field, you'd be definitely asking for your money back, especially that first half. But overall, you got to give props to Oseg for stepping up. I mean, they could have they dropped the ball. There's no question about that, if this is what truly happened. But the fact that they were able to pick themselves up and do right by the Alouettes and their fans, I definitely have to tip my cap to them for that one. I think it was really well done. I'm sure the fans definitely enjoyed the experience just that much more. And really, truly, the only bad thing you could say about this whole thing was, like I said, what you saw in the field was just not worth leaving Montreal for. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, at least the very first half, because I was this close to. I watched the game a little bit on delay. I was able to watch the first half because I had some other stuff to do. Then I had to watch the first half later on, second half later on. And it's funny, even though you can watch the game on delay, whether it be on your PVR or however you're watching it, that you still get the feels, you still get the goosebumps, you still get the excitement, even though the game is already over and you have summarily, stayed away from all spoilers. And I was still getting that because, I was able to watch the game up through the end of the third before something came about. And there was hope. But, before there's hope, there was despair. And it began with despair. And that's what we have to talk about first, because as far as I can remember, Cliff, this is probably one of the worst first halves I've ever seen the Alouettes play. I mean, Darian Durant, for some reason, is the first half for him and him, they don't mix. It's like oil and water. They only seem to gel in the second half. I mean, what was your take home from what you saw with Durant? I mean, obviously the game did not start off well at all. First possession of the game, first pass of the game, interception. I mean, come on.
No, it was definitely not Darian Durant's finer moment. Let's put it that way. It was just an absolutely horrendous first half of football, and made even more horrendous by the fact that Ottawa, even though they were able to capitalize for the most part on a lot of these turnovers, they still truly could have put a lot more points on the board and left a lot out on the field. That score of 17-6 at halftime, that could have been a lot worse. And thank goodness it wasn't, really, because this truly was a game of the bad Darian Durant and the good Darian Durant. Right. And we got to see both this game against the Red Blacks. People always talk about good Hank and bad Hank when it comes to Hall of Fame surefire Hall of Fame quarterback Henry Burris. I think you can say the same thing about Darian Durant. I mean, you saw absolutely horrendous first half from Darian Durant. I mean, the guy just looked absolutely terrible, and Montreal played just an awful, awful game in that first half. But the second half comes, you always talk about how you have to make halftime adjustments. And Darian Durant did make those adjustments. I don't know if he was threatened with the idea of being benched or if maybe he felt it coming if he didn't get his act together. But I tell you what, that second half of football was absolutely fantastic. Darian Durant put the team on his back. He stepped up to the plate and he played an outstanding second half of football. It's just really unfortunate that he also played a horrendous first half of football, because if the same Darian Durant would show up in the first half as it did in the second half, there's no question in my mind that Montreal would have absolutely destroyed the Red Blacks in this game.
Yeah. I mean, there was no doubt. I mean, it's literally, the old cliche, it was a tale of two halves. I mean, the Darian Durant that I'm trying to remember the last time Durant was this bad in the first half, or that I've seen that an Alouettes quarterback was this bad. I mean, not scoring aside, but, because of an inept offense. But this was just horrible. We second half was so much better. But then again, you have a game, and I made this known on Twitter. I said, and this is true. I says when you have four first half turnovers, and you turn the ball over twice in the red zone or the green zone or whatever they call it, you're going to lose, mm-hmm. which is what happened. Now, and the comeback was it was great, but you know, and they should have won based on that fact. But you got to cut out the mistakes. You really have to cut out the mistakes.
Yeah. Like I said, the Owls played a little bit of desperate football in that second half, and it showed because, again, they were down by quite a bit. If they wanted to even come close to making this a worthwhile matchup, they really had to step up. And, again, give them the credit, they did. The touchdown to Tyquan Underwood, absolutely beautiful. Finding Nick Lewis for his 1,000th career catch. Mm-hmm. In the second half, and then also eventually funding him for a touchdown just a little bit later on. I mean, those were absolutely great moments as well. And again, just the fact that they were actually able to shut Ottawa down for the most part in that second half. I mean, like I said, it's just frustrating. It's frustrating for fans to have to sit through that first half debacle. And you wonder why people get dejected. You wonder why people are down on the Alouettes. Well, when you offer up such abysmal play, like what do you expect from fans? I'd be pissed off too. I'd be turning off the TV too if I was, you know, if I didn't realize that, hey, this is the CFL and anything can happen. Mm. You can't discount that, but at the same time, it's very discouraging to sit and watch your team just absolutely crap the bed for that first half of football. And at that point, like, why would you give the team hope? But like I said, credit to Darian Durant. I mean, as bad as he played to start the game, he finished the game extremely well, and I'll give him a lot of credit for that. I just really hope that going forward, because this is becoming a trend right now, is it seems like the past few games, it's been first half has been an absolute dog's breakfast as far as how the team's played. But then they make those adjustments at halftime, which I've been begging them to do, and I think other fans too have been wanting to see some real adjustments being made at halftime. I think that the Alouettes now are sort of seeing, okay, this is what we have to do in order to win this game. And they're following through on the plan. So you can't be mad at that.
No.
It's just a matter of this having to play catch up or do just enough like to not lose as opposed to doing what you have to do to win. I think these are the things that Montreal has to really take a hold of. And really, if they don't get this figured out and figured out fast, the season's it's only five games long or it's only five games old, sorry. But already, like, a good portion of it's gone. And
yeah, we're almost a third of the way through the season. I know.
Yeah, that's what's going to come down to is how, like, before the bye, you'll have played six games, which is essentially a third of the season,
right?
And what do you have to show for it? Are you gonna? If you're lucky, you're gonna be 3-3.
Let's hope.
Reality is though, you could be 2-4, and even if you're playing in a very weak Eastern Division, at the end of the day, you're still not. You are what your record says you are. Like, there's a lot of hard-fought wins and moral victories and blah blah blah, but that doesn't add up to a hill of beans. At the end of the day, your record is what you say. Your record, you are what your record says you are. And if you're 2-4, even if you're 3-3, that's not exactly something to write home about. But if you're 2-4, you're in a lot of trouble.
It's, I mean, and the Owls had they were this close to winning. I mean, we know they were driving. It was the drive, and they were controlling the clock exactly as any team should have. This is the team, and remember a few weeks ago that I said that you know that one of the Owls' drives was the best I have seen all year. And the second half, that's what the Owls were doing. They had all the momentum, and I'm sure you can remember. You know what the crowd was like in that late in that fourth quarter. I'm sure there were a lot of very nervous Red Black fans, but the dreaded third down gamble came back to bite them in the ass. And I know you were talking about this on the Alternative, your blog that that you write each week. You had some very interesting things to say about it. And we'll get more to the stats and stuff that we found about Darian Durant and the team itself. But you know, we talked about issues with the referees and stuff like that. Not that we're saying that the referees cost the Owls the game this week. But they were, you know, they were a part of the equation. But explain the situation if for any of those who didn't see or hear your thoughts about that third down gamble late in the fourth.
Well, and again, it's understandable that Alouettes fans are going to say, oh, the referees cost us the game. No, the referees did not cost the Alouettes the game. The Alouettes cost themselves the game.
Yeah.
Their absolutely brutal play in the first half is what sunk them more than anything else. The fact that you had to play catch-up against a team that, I'm sorry, had not won a regular season game yet. I don't care. Like I said, I don't care how good you think you are. At the end of the day, they were still a team that had not won a football game in 2017.
Yeah, they were
up until
close.
That point.
Yeah, the Red Blacks were this close to becoming the worst start ever for a defending Grey Cup champion.
There you go. And again, close games, that's all well and good, but at the end of the day, you don't win the Grey Cup on close games.
No.
Like, you don't with a losing score, I should say. But
well, if I say in Ottawa's case, you win it in overtime.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah.
But again, this notion that the referees are out to get us, again, there's been some absolutely garbage calls that have been made, not just against the Alouettes, but pretty much every team has suffered the fate of some absolutely poor officiating. So we can't even use that as an excuse. At the end of the day, Montreal did cost themselves this game, and they've got no one to blame but themselves. You can blame the referees all you want. It makes you look stupid when you do that, because referees are just bad all around. I mean, that's just the way it is. And like it or not, it's something that you almost have to prepare for as a team. You're not just preparing for your opponent, but you're also preparing for the fact that the referees are going to make bad calls. Sometimes they're against you, sometimes they're for you, but these calls are going to happen. So at the end of the day, why put yourself in a position where you have to rely on where the referee spots the ball or what they're willing to let you get away with as far as tight hands play or anything like that goes? Why put the game in the referee's hands? At the end of the day, you got to own it. You got to own the game and perform the way you're supposed to do. I mean, you're all professionals. You can't keep making these mistakes, as far as I'm concerned. Like, this is what separates the winners from the losers, like the real top tier teams in the league versus the guys that by and large belong in the basement. Do I think Montreal belongs in the basement? Hell no, I don't. I think this team is definitely
this is a good team. This is a good team, but just the first half is killer, man. I mean, you got to think about it. There is, considering what the Isles have done and how bad that they have been from what we've seen in the first half and how well they did in the second. I mean, this team is only overall a -8 in points for, points against. -8. That's it. They're not getting blown out. They've not given up more than 25 points in a game so far this year. Sorry, 24 points in a game this year. It's just crazy. This is a good team. The Owls were this close. They were on the cusp of winning this game.
Yeah, and credit to the Red Blacks. They hung in there. They did just enough to have to win. And that's what it came down to as well, is they made a lot of mistakes too. They also left a lot of points on the board. I think they, especially towards that last drive, it really just came down to, okay, we just got to survive. And that's really not the best way to be playing football. But like I said, they did just enough to win this game.
Now,
or essentially to not lose it. Let's put it that way. They did just enough to not lose this game. So credit to the Red Blacks. They got their first win. Unfortunately, it was at Montreal's expense. But, hey, that's football for you.
Now, go ahead and give your comments, though, for those who didn't see it, on that third down play by Vernon Adams Jr. I mean, I thought he had gotten it. You thought he'd gotten it. You actually had a screen capture of the game itself where you thought it actually showed that he had made the first down, right?
Absolutely. And as I said, once again, as our good friend David Sanchez likes to say, men lie, women lie, children lie, film don't lie. And sure enough, like I said, the screen cap, if you go to the alternative.com website, you'll see it in the latest article. It's clearly marked. I even circled where exactly the football and Vernon Adams' arm was, where he had the football in his hands, and he was way past the first down marker. Now, I know the first down marker on TV is supposed to be sort of like a guiding point or a suggested point, but I mean, at the end of the day, like, if you're going strictly by the visual, and that's all, as fans, anyone's watching on TV or watches the game afterwards, that's all you have to go on. So, I mean, it was pretty clear he had the first down. Whoever it was that spotted it, I'm sorry, that they need to get glasses or they need to have laser eye surgery. They got to do something to have better vision, because that was an absolutely horrendous spot.
And the Owls couldn't do anything about it, obviously, because that's one of the few things that you can challenge on a third down is the spot of a ball. But the Owls did not have a challenge in order to do so, did they?
Nope. And again, just So just some of the decision making on this team this season has been questionable at best. And again, this was another situation. But at the end of the day, it still shouldn't have come to that. Because again, during that drive, there was two third and one gambles. And the first one was absolutely brilliant. They pulled out that same trick play that they used against Saskatchewan using B.J. Cunningham on a jet sweep to get that first down and then some.
Yep.
Obviously, they're not going to go back to that well again because Ottawa would be expecting it. But at the same time, like the fact that you more or less had yourself in this situation where you had to go for it on first down, and I always say you can always do a little bit more. And I want to believe in my heart of hearts that Montreal did everything they could to win this game. But at the same time, it really shouldn't have come to that point. Like that's what really sucks more than anything else. I can accept losing. I can accept giving it your all and still not coming out the victor. It's that, like I said, that first part where things just looked absolutely horrendous. And at that point, you're playing catch up. And once you're playing catch up, the odds of winning just are so low. And it's just not the way you should be playing professional football, especially in the Canadian Football League. I get that no lead is safe and you got to play all 60 minutes and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, why put yourself in these situations time and time and time again? That's the frustrating part, especially if you're an Alouettes fan this season. You've seen it more than once. And we keep hoping week after week that it's going to stop. This is going to be the week where they really, truly get their act together and figure out how to win and win it in convincing fashion. And I'm really hoping that if for no other reason, to go into the bye on just a bit of a positive note, if they can just get their act together, pull out a win against Winnipeg, go into the bye 3-3, and just sort of refocus, refigure what they want to do going forward for the next two halves of the season, or the two-thirds of the season, I should say.
And the Owls have done well in the past. I mean, I mentioned this last week when we were talking about when it comes to scoring, try to have the ball. And I think the Alouettes have done well about that. And I wonder if they should continue to do this because they are able to get points right before the end of the half, right, Cliff? And then they got the ball back at the beginning of the second half, and they scored. That's what you need to do. And I pointed that out before the last couple times they've done this. That's the best way to win these games. It gives you the best option, especially if either A, you're behind or you get a lead, you're able to expand. It's like a 14 point swing just by able to have the ball at the end of the half, have some points, and then score when you get the ball at the beginning of the second half.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked. Darian Durant, overall in the day for the game, he was 35 of... God, can't read my notes.
Clean your glasses.
Yes. And what's funny is that he ended up being 35 of 45, 78% for 452 yards, two interceptions, two touchdowns. That was a surprise. The one turnover that was a clear turnover when he got totally destroyed, and they called it a forward pass, was ludicrous in itself. We're talking about refs again. Anyways,
Tuck rule.
Yeah. So Durant, by the way, with his yardage, he was the first 400 plus yard passer since AC did it, 443 yards back in 2012 versus Winnipeg. So he wasn't, and by the way, he was nowhere near the team record of Sam Echeverria, 586 yards set in 1954 versus Hamilton. That's a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time ago. Leaders itself, Ernest Jackson, Action Jackson, he did well. It was 8 for 8, basically, 8 targets, 8 catches, 101 yards, had... Didn't have any touchdowns though. Underwood, 5 catches for 95 yards, and the man of the hour, man of the game. Well, obviously can't forget B.J. Cunningham, 5 receptions, 101 yards, and then Nick Lewis, 8 receptions, only 64 yards, a touchdown. But he became the fourth player in CFL history with 1,000 career receptions.
There you go. I mean, 1,000. A thousand. I mean, that's just what more is there to say about Thick Nick? How do you not love this guy? How do you not love the passion and the energy he brings to each and every football game? Like, he plays every game like it's his last. And there's more talk, like the talk is starting to circle a little bit more and more that this really could very well be his last year in the CFL. And I'll tell you what, if he doesn't go out as a Grey Cup champion, you better believe he's going to go out just setting records and doing everything possible to win games. And how can you not love that?
And in his absence of Terrell Sutton, I think Brandon Rutley did an okay job. I mean, 13 carries for 48 yards. I mean, he had issues at the beginning. He wasn't going north-south, and I think that was the problem. But once he started going north-south, you know, he was able to get some yardage.
Yeah, recovered from his fumble as well. So, I mean, it's good. It's going to – it happens to every running back. Every – even Jerome Messam fumbles once in a while. In fact, he fumbled against Montreal. So a fumble is not going to – it shouldn't make or break you. But just the fact that we're giving Rutley as many touches as possible, getting J.C. Beaulieu involved in the game as well.
Another great run by Beaulieu. Another great run.
I'm telling you this – people don't know to have – they don't get ready for this guy, and I love it. I love the fact that everybody's sleeping on this kid because he's a dual threat. I don't know how many times I have to tell you people this, but this is a guy that you have to pay absolute attention to, and Montreal is not doing themselves any favors every time they leave him off the – out of the play equation because he catches, he runs. What more do you want from the guy? The guy's a hoss. He can get the yards on the ground. He can catch the ball. I mean, does everything but kick footballs, as far as I know. So, I mean, like, why not put – you have a weapon like this in your arsenal. Don't just leave him strictly as a blocking back. I mean, the guy has talent like you wouldn't believe. He's still young, too. That's what I love. This kid is still – some of his best – he's played some of his best football so far, but I still think his really best football is way ahead of him. So, if I'm Coach Chapdelaine – I just got to find ways. I don't care how. I just got to find ways to get this kid involved more in the offense. I mean, the talent's there. And you've got a lot of talent at receiver already. And you've already got extremely, extremely good running backs in both Tyrell Sutton and Brandon Rutley.
Yeah. Now,
but you got a hybrid of the two of them, though, in Beaulieu. You've got the best of both worlds. So why not find a way to incorporate him more into the offense? Like, I'm really hoping that for the next two-thirds of the season, we start to see a lot more of J.C. Beaulieu because the – again, I'll say it again. The talent is there. You know exactly what you get with this guy. And I really, truly think that the best is yet to come for him.
Obviously, we have to give props because it wasn't all – sure, it was the Owls shooting themselves in the foot. But we have to give props to Greg Ellingson. I mean, he was a one-man wrecking crew versus the Alouettes. So it makes – it goes to my next question to you, Cliff. I mean – first game back for Jonathan Mincy after being, you know, out with concussion protocol. How would you rate about what he and Chris Ackee did? I mean, because it's they got burned. They really did. They got I think Chip Cox was part of that. Unfortunately, part of that issue too. I mean, they just got burned on the Ellingson touchdown.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I just don't think Chip Cox should be lining up in the secondary. I mean, Chip is an absolutely fantastic linebacker, and I know that the plan going into 2017 with Noel Thorpe was to get as many people involved in both the secondary and the linebacking core, get sort of mix things up to really give a whole lot of new looks, but Chip was really out of place, especially on that Ellingson touchdown. I mean, I would say if they're even, they're leaving, and my gosh, that that connection from Harris to Ellingson was a thing of beauty. I mean, you can't even be mad at it, except for the fact that, well, means points for Ottawa, so I guess you can be a little bit mad at it, but at the same time, though, like blown coverage, and I really just think it came down to Harris knowing that Chip Cox is not your typical secondary. He's not your half. He's not a halfback. He's very much a linebacker, and Chip doesn't have the foot speed to be able to keep up with a Ellingson like that. Especially once they take once he takes off like that, he was off to the races. Yeah, there's nothing they could do at that point.
As I said, it was, but overall, Mincy's first game back. I mean, I felt it was pretty solid. I mean, it's the guy that we've been seeing just this year. I mean, before he was hurt with the concussion, but you know, again, the defense is in its mode of almost bend and sometime break. But you know, it's as I said, they're only a minus eight this year.
Yeah, and also I've got to give a lot of credit to Brandon Stewart as well. He was a late addition, and he played a very solid game against Ottawa as well. Again, not easy to step in, especially to. But again, this is a veteran, and even though he's been playing with mostly kids in the Alouette secondary, he has held his own, and I've been very impressed with everything I've seen from him so far. I think that's one of those sort of under the radar moves that a lot of people maybe didn't give a whole lot of thought to at first, because everybody's taking a look at all the youngsters and how well they did last year, and would they be able to continue that success this year in 2017? And it's almost easy to overlook a Brandon Stewart, but he played extremely solid against Ottawa, and I just don't see that stopping anytime soon. So I can't help but feel encouraged overall with what we see defensively from the Alouettes. It's just a matter of little things here and there, and like I said, maybe just leave Chip Cox in the middle, because that's really where his strength lies.
Yeah, and we have to, as we have been for every week so far, you and I had a little bit more discussion on this one, because we could have gone a lot of ways with it. The flight deck game ball of the week is going to...
It's got to go to Nick Lewis. I said, 1,000 catches. How do you say no to that? How do you overlook something like that? You simply can't. I mean, Nick has been a little bit quiet compared to the other receivers for the Alouettes this season, but this game, he kind of came alive with his catches, and just the fact that he was able to get number 1,000 against the Red Blacks was absolutely fantastic, and just once again, helping to cement the legend that is Nick Lewis. Yeah, absolutely. The Alouettes flight deck game ball is definitely going this week to Nick Lewis.
Oh, it has to. And by the way, again, props to again, they're able to pull stuff. I swear, you know, they pull out. I saw it a couple weeks ago where another broadcast that had pulled out some old footage of a well-known star. And again, I love how the networks do this type of thing. They pulled out the old footage of Nick Lewis. It was absolutely I don't know if you ended up seeing it on the replay, but them pulling out for, I think it was first year Nick Lewis, where his name at that time wasn't Thick. It was a little bit thinner of a Nick Lewis, and then just the play that they pulled out, just to see the old school stuff of these players when they were. When they were young and first come into the league and impressionable, and was an absolute joy to see. You ended up seeing it, right?
I did, and yeah, it was like, wow, Nick Lewis, he was like real thin.
Yeah, that's exactly what was said.
And listen, I'll never call Nick Lewis fat, but he's definitely bulked up quite a bit. And to his credit, I guarantee he is 10 times the athlete I could hope to be. I can tell you right now, like I said, if you were him and I do a foot race, he would destroy me. I don't care how big he is. I don't care. Like I said, dude's got wheels still, and he can catch. And like I said, if this is truly going to be his last year, I'm going to be sad, because the guy is absolutely outstanding, and he's been a great Alouette for us the past couple of years. And like I said, Hall of Fame, there's absolutely no question. He's already got two Grey Cup rings, and God willing, he'll get a third this year. But I tell you, like this Alouettes team is so much better for having Nick Lewis on it. And yeah, it's got to give him all the props in the world. He's an absolutely fantastic person, both on and off the field. So Nick, once again, congratulations on 1,000+ catches.
And we have to try to get him on the podcast before the season's done.
Oh, we'll make that happen. Yeah. It's a done deal. We'll make that happen.
We got to get that done. Looking for something different from your snacks? Grab a bag of Bad Monkey Popcorn. Bad Monkey Popcorn is produced locally in Montreal in a number of mouth-watering flavors that will have your taste buds wanting more after just one kernel. Now available throughout Quebec in most major grocery stores, independent outlets, and selected cities across Canada. For more information, head to badmonkeypopcorn.com.
Hey folks, we appreciate your continued support of the Alouettes Flight Deck Podcast. You can find all of our previous episodes over on Podbean. Just head to alouettesflightdeck.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play Music by searching the keywords Alouettes Flight Deck. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @AlouettesFLDeck and check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/AlouettesFlightDeck. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about the show, you can shoot us an email, alouettespodcast@gmail.com. Once again, thanks so much for listening.
Having the early week, I think, threw me off completely. It really did. And what's funny is that during halftime of the Ottawa-Montreal game, Ottawa's already played their week six game.
It's a week five game.
Sorry, Toronto. But Toronto has played six, though. Anyways, nine teams, what you gonna do? Commissioner Ambrosi actually was asked about that particular thing, and I wanted to see what you thought about this too, Cliff. You know, basically, the Red Blacks had played 4 games in 17 days. They played 2 games in 5. And this is a, as I said, because of 9 teams and the way the buys are worked out, I think there's always a game, at least one game every year, where a team is inconvenienced. Is that a good word? Inconvenienced and has to play, like Ottawa did, 2 games in such a short span, and then ends up being 3 games in like 11 or 12 days. Now, the commissioner just coming in seems to have a lot of ideas, and we hope to have him on the show very soon. Basically, to quote him during the halftime show from Ottawa, too many games in too few days. What's your opinion on this? I mean, like I said, the Alouettes have gone through this, I think, two times over the last 3 years. And I know Ottawa fans and Ottawa, I think Ottawa brass were just none too happy about them having to go through it this year. I mean, it's like us complaining about Thursday games. But well, what's your take on this? I mean, what actually in your, I mean, the commissioner's, I think, is pretty dead on. But it's just a matter of what can be done in order to fix this besides getting a 10th team, which may be anywhere from 5 to 10 to 12 years away, if that.
Well, that would be the automatic fix, would be to get a 10th team or drop a team, but neither one of those situations is at all feasible. It's so hard. At this point, what can you do? Only other way you can sort of work around it is have week one be, let's say, the Grey Cup rematch, and that's it.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay. I see where you're going with this, which it usually is.
Well, as far as the matchups go, yes, that's usually what it is. But have that just be the sole game of week one.
Okay.
And then from that point, do the schedule that way so that all the teams are balanced still. You still play all of your games, but at the same time, yeah, there's going to be one team that – or teams are going to get kind of screwed either way.
Like, yeah, I'm wondering, even if you have that one-week game, I mean, sure, every team will have a bye. 4 other teams will have a bye.
The teams that aren't playing are going to have a bye.
Seven,
you're right.
7 other teams will have a bye. It's an idea. I just don't know how. What we need to do is we need to get the gentleman who does the scheduling for the CFL and see how hard it is to come up with this and to be the team that's going to get summarily screwed for that period of time. And how much of a toll it takes on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
It's a tough situation, and I know the commissioner has been very vocal about how he feels about that. Like, he definitely is not in favor of any team playing essentially 4 games in 17 days or however the equation works out. It's rough. I mean, like, each game is essentially a car crash, and just playing once a week is tough. I can only imagine, like the way that the schedule works out with some of these, like the Thursday games and a lot of short weeks and what have you, it's tough. And it's not easy for the league as well, because they're the ones that have to schedule all these games. But
right.
Some sort of happy medium has to be able to be found. And I'm really hoping that Randy Ambrosi does sort of take a good long look at essentially – well, he's going to be looking at all the issues that affect all 9 teams in the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, he's already started bringing up the idea of the salary cap and the minimum amount per season. So that's interesting also.
Oh yeah, like there's a CBA that has to be negotiated in the next couple of years. TV, the re-upping the TV deal with TSN. I mean, there's a lot of things that are coming up. I mean, it seems far away, but they'll get here before you know it. But yeah, as far as the scheduling goes, I mean, there's got to be some sort of way to sort of make things a little bit more bearable. And the idea that, well, eventually all the teams are going to suffer this fate and it'll eventually even itself out, that's not really the way to go about it. I think there has to be some sort of logical, logistical way to make a schedule with 9 teams work as best as possible. And I think that'll be one of the many, many, many challenges that Randy Ambrosi faces, at least in his first year and going forward. I know he's been very vocal about this, so obviously he must have something in mind that he'd like to get implemented. So I'm curious to see what he can come up with, and if he can make it work amongst the Board of Governors, amongst the Players Association. Just basically get everybody on the same page. That seems going to have to be the key thing more than anything else. I think players will be on board with that because nobody wants that grind of playing three games in 11 days or whatever the case may be. The owners, too, eventually they're going to feel it as well. Like right now, it's not affecting them physically, but it could affect them financially. And also, too, the fans as well have to be able to have a say in the matter as well, because at the end of the day, it's the fans that are in the stands. They're the ones that are buying the merch. They're buying the tickets. They're buying everything. So you got to be able to cater to them properly and put together a schedule that is more fan friendly than anything else. And as much as we all want to see as much football as possible every single day, we got to be realistic about how we go about in our consumption of said football and to make it better, essentially, because if these guys are all playing, the more games they're playing too, the likely they are they're going to get hurt, the more likely they're going to be making mistakes on the field as well. So these are all other things that have to be considered as well. So it's not easy. I will say that it's easy to sit on our couch and, you know, make suggestions and pontificate, oh, well, we should do this. It would be better if we did this. But at the end of the day, sometimes these things just simply cannot happen the way we'd like them to happen.
And to me, it's just having the commissioner there who's been through everything, been part of the PA, been part of being a player, you know, is now in the position that is in. It can be very interesting. And I'm very curious to see how it's going to work out for a lot of these big things that are coming. Because, you know, even though, yes, that Ambrosi is the face of the league, you know, his bosses are still the board of, you know, the board of governors. But it can be very interesting to see what he can convince the other owners to do. And make changes, make improvements to this league that hopefully that everybody will like. So there's a lot of stuff on this plate, including, you know, the issues that they're having in Toronto. You know, it took a bobblehead day, which were, by the way, very nice bobbleheads that they're giving away in Toronto to celebrate the, you know, Doug Flutie and their Grey Cups. But that it took a bobblehead day to basically get another 4,000 people in the stands.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the game played on a Monday too, I don't know if that was a factor in it or not, or if
or what exactly. It's not in any way, shape, or form for Argos fans this year, for the Argonauts this year, anyways. So,
yeah, I mean, and again, it's got nothing to do with the football itself. I just really think that there's so much scorched earth when it comes to Toronto and the Argos themselves that it really is going to take a long time to get things back to a good place. And the fact that they're playing some really outstanding football can only help the cause. They made the right moves as far as bringing in Jim Popp and Mark Trestman. Keeping Ricky Ray healthy has been key for them as well. So, I mean, like, on the field, by and large, they're doing everything right. It's not perfect, but Toronto is on the field doing everything right. It's just a matter now of doing the right things off the field and not panicking. If maybe to get the best crowd of the year, you had to offer up bobbleheads to fans to get them out there, and also trot out a whole bunch of legends from 20 years ago. And sometimes that's what it takes. Whatever it takes to put butts in the seats, that's what you got to do. And hopefully going forward, now that some of these fans, I'm sure, just showed up only for the bobbleheads, but you know what? They got treated to a fairly good game.
Pretty
last
good
night.
Price. Yeah, ticket prices too, man.
That's just it. You got to price this thing right. Don't out, even though it's Toronto, you can't be charging premium prices to see the Argos at BMO Field. Price the game right. Do whatever it takes as far as promotions and what have you. And again, as long as you're winning football games, the fans will come. It's going to take time, though, because like I said, they really salted the earth when it came to the Argos over at the Sky Dome and all everything else that's kind of gone on with them as a result. But they keep at it. I think a lot of the fans that went for the first time last night just to grab a bobblehead. But you know what? They got treated to a pretty awesome football game as well. And maybe, just maybe, on the strength of that, they'll say, you know what? Maybe I've been missing out on something here. You know what? I'm going to go back and I want to see this team again. And I want to come back to this awesome stadium. I want to come back and be part of that whole game day experience. So I'm really hoping for their sake, because again, a stronger Toronto means a stronger league. Everybody's happy. So I really hope for their sake that this was the start, hopefully, of better days, shall we say, for the Argos.
Yeah. A little bit semi CFL related, as far as the CFL podcast family goes, CFL podcast family and the Canadian Football Podcast Network family goes. I know you wanted to mention something before we talk about this week's upcoming game versus Winnipeg, but take the floor.
Well, it's regarding, like I said, our fellow podcasters over at Piffles Pod, both Alex and Amy, as also known as Real LXD and CFL Hottie Bowl on Twitter. They've been together now for quite some time, and they're trying to start a family. And unfortunately...
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that they not only do they canoodle on the podcast, but they canoodle in real life?
Look, I'm just shocked that podcasters are getting laid, quite frankly.
Nice.
Tell you, mom's basement, y'all.
Oh, man. Let's see. Oh, let's see. Edmonton. They have one in Edmonton. They got a basement. They got that studio there. What goes on in that studio for you guys at for Piffles? You two over at the Turf District. Turf rug burn, anybody? Anyways, continue. Wow, I really got off track real quick. Continue.
Yeah, yeah, you went right off the rails there, pal. But on a serious note, both Alex and Amy, they've been trying to start a family, and pretty much the only way that's going to happen would be through in vitro fertilization. So now they're trying to raise some funds to help with that, because it's certainly not cheap, especially out in Saskatchewan. So I'm calling on everybody that's listening to this show to, if you have a chance, check out the page. If you have it over to twitter.com/pifflespod, you'll see a link for the GoFundMe that they've got set up for this. If you have if you're able to donate any amount of money to these absolutely wonderful folks, I've had a chance to meet them when I went to Regina last year, and just absolutely wonderful. Like, everybody at the Piffles Pod is fantastic. You hear them all the time. They're absolutely great, but they're also really wonderful people as well. So if you're able to help contribute to this, by all means, please do. The link's on the Piffles Pod website. Every little bit helps, right? So if you have a chance to do so, like I said, Alex and Amy are just absolutely wonderful people. If you have it in your heart to just donate a little bit, please, by all means, do so. And if you can't donate, then share the link, whether you post it on Facebook, Twitter, any sort of social media. Get the word out. Let's help these guys, because I think they're absolutely wonderful people, and let's see if we can't get them in that family way.
Nice. Again, head over to piffelspod.com, and if you can give, if you can, because it's different. I think you know, if they were in Quebec, I think it's slightly different here in Quebec. And any other Quebecers, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think at one point the government was helping fund. The in vitro, but I think that may have changed recently. But still, it's it's not a cheap process. Not a cheap process at all. So
no, and I know that they've raised quite a bit of money so far for this, which is absolutely fantastic. But I mean, $10,000 is still a lot of money for a lot of people. So I mean, if, like I said, if you're able to help out, please, by all means, do so. I know they'd really appreciate it, and they're not the kind of people that want to go out there with like hat in hand to beg for money. It's just not their style. But if you're able to help out in any way, shape, or form, please do so. It'd be really, really appreciated.
We got Winnipeg this week. The game's going to be in Winnipeg. Team will have an extra day of rest because of the game that was on Wednesday. This is a game, in my opinion, I think that they really need to win. As I said, we said earlier in the beginning of the show, we're coming up on the first third of the season already. The last time that the Alouettes were 3-3 by the Wycliffe was all the way back in 2012. So it is a milestone. By the way, that happened to be the last time the team finished over 500. Mm-hmm. There is a positive to this. I guess it just depends on what this team needs to do, because at some point during this week, you know, the game that Winnipeg played versus BC and basically destroying them. You know, even Herb Sarkowski, the Montreal Gazette, was saying, you know, the Owls were not going to, the way that they were, the team was playing at that time, the Owls were not going to beat this Winnipeg team. But then again, Winnipeg collapsed and BC came back, you know, with Travis Lule under center again. But anyways, is Winnipeg this good, or are they very similar to what the Owls are? They peak at one point, whether even negatively or positively, and then they just go the complete opposite way. I mean, is this a team that you know, that the Alouettes can beat and go into their bye week on a winning note?
Well, this is the one thing I found with Winnipeg and Montreal is I do get a lot of Jekyll and Hyde from both of these teams. Like, you've got some quarters where you're playing absolutely outstanding football, and then you got others where you just let leads slip away or you just play absolutely terrible football. And I also want to say you don't know which Winnipeg team's going to show up, but I mean, Winnipeg by and large has been extremely competitive in all their games. Even their losses have been extremely competitive. So, I mean, by and large, I definitely think Winnipeg is one of those teams that, once again, is going to astound you, both in a negative and a positive way. I think what's going to be key, though, is this defense is taking quite a bit of a hit, just like ours was taking one earlier this season.
Right.
Big key that for the Blue Bombers is Maurice Leggett, one of their premier defensive players, will not be playing in this game.
That's true, yes.
They've got a bunch of rookie DBs that have looked extremely susceptible. So, I mean, if Darren Durant can get his act together and find the guys like BJ Cunningham and Nick Lewis downfield, they've got all the potential in the world to torch these youngsters. And this is how you're going to have to beat Winnipeg, is just out, just gunslinging. You're going to have to throw the ball way past these guys and just, you're just going to have to torch them. That's all there is to it. Because I'll tell you right now, the special teams for Winnipeg is scary good. I mean, Justin Medlock is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, the plays this guy can make.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Like I said, that fake field goal just to keep the drive going.
Beauty. CFL at its best. CFL at its best. If you hadn't seen it, if you have a chance and you're listening to us in the U.S. and you didn't see the game, make sure you go and you check out, see if you can see the highlights. I guess on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers Facebook page, it was CFL, it was a thing of beauty. Thing of beauty. Mm-hmm. I said only in the CFL.
Mm-hmm. But again, like I said, when it comes to this defense, though, I mean, like the one side of the field is full of rookies and very susceptible, but the other side, you've got real ball hawks like Chris Randall. I mean, this guy has burned Montreal so many times in the past, and I wouldn't bet against – if Darren Durant's smart, he's just going to avoid this guy like the plague because he's got some hands on him and he can take one back to the house no problem. So I'm really looking for Montreal to just sort of attack the weak side as much as possible and just really put guys like Rock Carmichael and Brandon Alexander, the rookies for Winnipeg, really put them through their paces. I mean, you got to take full advantage of that because – You also take a look at Matt Nichols, quarterback for the Blue Bombers. Great quarterback. By and large, he is a great quarterback. Is he elite? I don't think he is. I think he's really prone to making a lot of mistakes, especially towards the end of the game. I see a lot of Kevin Glenn in him in the sense that he can play really well. He can do some outstanding things, but he's almost guaranteed for that clutch interception to throw late in the game, and it's one of those ones that ends up being those back-breaking, soul-crushing kind of INTs that where it turns a Winnipeg win into a Winnipeg loss. So Montreal's got to be able to take advantage of that some way, somehow. They've really got to get in his kitchen and really mess with his head. I think that's going to be the key to victory more than anything else, is getting to Nichols as much as possible, making him uncomfortable, making him make those kind of mistakes that he's prone to making, and then just, like I said, get the offense together. Darren Durant from the second quarter has to play in the first quarter, second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter of this game on Thursday. That's all there is to it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He has to play his best possible game as an Alouette.
The Alouettes that were able to control their penalties again for the first time this past week, and we saw what they did. It'll be very, very interesting. As I said, the Owls themselves, they've split the last 10 games, I think, versus Winnipeg at Winnipeg. This is a scarier thought too here, but I think we have a better chance with this one. Cliff, is that this will be when they meet Winnipeg this Thursday? This will be the fifth different starting quarterback over the past 5 years that have played in Winnipeg, that have started in Winnipeg. Fifth different quarterback.
It's incredible.
Yeah, so it's, and obviously it was Kevin Glenn last year. By the way, I know we didn't mention, you mentioned before, Kevin Glenn, congratulations, by the way, you didn't mention him earlier in the show. Congrats on passing your milestone. I mean, 50,000 yards for summarily a 500 quarterback. Mm-hmm. That shows longevity. It shows longevity. Anyways, Now, for the Owls, you know, we see they have pretty good wide receiver core. What's it going to be for the Alouettes with Tyquan Underwood? He's going to be shelved for one game because of a lower body injury. What are the Owls going to do when it comes to trying to replace him and inserting this new wide receiver into the mix with our wide receiving core?
Well, it, like you said, Underwood's out, and coming in is Eugene Lewis, who had an absolutely outstanding training camp. He played a great game, preseason game against Ottawa, and did just enough to get himself a practice roster spot. So he's, from what I've seen in practice, he's, dude's outstanding. Like, the guy has a lot of potential, and it's just a matter of biding your time. Like, a lot of these receivers that we've had in Montreal over the years, going back all the way to Ron Carter back in 2013, you saw the talent every time you went to practice. You saw what these guys can do, and it's just a matter of, okay, they're just biding their time. They're just waiting for the right moment to get into the lineup, and once they do, watch out. And I got a feeling that Eugene Lewis is going to be exactly that for the Montreal Alouettes. He's a big body receiver. He can handle the deep threat no problem. I'm really looking forward to seeing what this guy can do, especially lining up alongside with BJ Cunningham. You got Nick Lewis in the slot as well. I mean, like, these are the guys that you have to be, like I said, taking advantage of a weakened secondary for Winnipeg. Like, these are the guys you got to rely on receivers like this to really flat out play your opponents. And I'd really like to see Montreal just run up the score, quite frankly. And the way you're going to do that is to take advantage. And a big body receiver like that, that's going to be the perfect antidote to, say, a Darvin Adams, who's also a receiver for Winnipeg. And this is a guy that has to be shut down at all costs. I think this is one of the most dangerous weapons that Winnipeg has, and another one that could easily burn the Alouettes if given the opportunity. I mean, if Matt Nichols comes in and plays the game like he's supposed to be playing, Montreal, their secondary is going to have to step up. They can't be this is not the time to be doing like a patchwork kind of secondary. Like, you got to have your best players forward, and you got to have guys on top of receivers like Adams, and just making life miserable for Matt Nichols as much as possible. Like, these are the things that Montreal is going to have to do, plain and simple, if they want to have any chance of winning it in Winnipeg against the Bombers.
It should be an interesting game, and I forgot to bring it up while we're doing it pre-game, pre-show. Sorry about that. The game itself, Winnipeg. It's the home thing, home thing. Winnipeg is favored by 4 points versus the Alouettes, according to Five Dimes, and the over under is actually 51 points. So seems to be, wow. Calgary line. Ouch. 12.5 points. I think, you know what, considering the way that these two teams have been playing, I think they got the line pretty dead on. I think it's just a matter of, again, if the Alouettes are able to take advantage with all their wide receivers, stay away from all these turnovers. Have a complete game. And again, I will stress, if you are able to take the ball in the second half, take the ball in the second half. You seem to have done right the past couple of times when you've done this. Get the ball at the end of the half, get the ball at the beginning of the second half, take advantage of the scoring, and like it did last week, it brought them closer to Ottawa. Stay away from the penalties, stay away from the damn turnovers. Please, please, please. Darian, come on. Something, dude, something.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you know what kind of quarterback Darian Durant is, and to see him, like I said, it's going to be burned in my mind for a little while that he just absolutely got trucked. And
That was a legitimate turnover.
It was a legitimate turnover. There's no question about that. But the fact that it shouldn't have been like that in the first place, like, just stop trying to put a square peg in a round hole. That's the only thing I want to say to Darian. I mean, I have all the respect in the world for him as a quarterback and as a human being. But my word, some of these play calls are it hurts the brain, quite frankly. I'm like, just for crying out loud, take the sack if you have to. Protect the ball, whatever you got to do. I mean, like, some of these decisions are just, they're just little mistakes, and they end up looking so big on a stage like this, and it's hard to defend. And that's my point, really, more than anything else, is that I can't stand watching a really good quarterback play lousy. And it just comes down to the decisions he makes. And to his credit, Darren Durant did get his act together in the second half. I would just like to see a much more consistent game from him for all four quarters. That's all. I really don't think that's too much to ask, especially of a guy who is, by and large, one of the better quarterbacks in this league when he's on. And we did see a lot of that in the second half against Ottawa. And I got a feeling that I really think that that loss against Ottawa, I really hope it lit a fire under him. I really hope it made him reflect back. Like, he's had a little over a week now to think about this, and I really hope it really lit a fire under him and made him a better quarterback as a result. I really want to see if he comes out hot against Winnipeg, comes out motivated, doesn't make any mistakes, and just marches Montreal down the field as much as possible. And yeah, sometimes you have to go for three as opposed to going for seven. I'd prefer to see less of that. But you know what? At the end of the day, if you're not turning the ball over, you're not making stupid mistakes, as long as you're trying to put points on the board, the wins are going to come. And I have every faith in the world that Darren Durant is going to get it figured out and quickly. That's my hope anyways. I believe he can do that. Don't let me down, Darian. For God's sakes, don't let me down.
No, I think he did. I think, yeah, he showed some promise, and it'll be very interesting to see how well he does. And don't forget, you know, the game will be on TSN and RDS.
And ESPN2 for all of our fans listening down in the States.
Yep, there we go. Yep, on ESPN2. So enjoy the game, and we're obviously hoping for better things. I think the team needs to go into their break with a 3-3 record. It would be a huge positive. So,
you know what? Like, a 3-3 record doesn't sound great on first glance, but I tell you what, for this particular Ottawa team and just the way that things are shaping up in the Eastern Division, 3-3 is not terrible. I mean, 3-3. I'd pretty much predicted at the start of the season that 9-9 is going to be good enough to get into the playoffs, and that's where I thought Montreal was going to end up. And I guess they're kind of there now. They're almost there now. So why not go into this bye week, the first of the two bye weeks, go in with a little bit of momentum, go in with that W, take a look at how things are during the bye week, see what adjustments really truly have to be made, and learn from it, and just be better as a result. That would be my goal if I'm a member of the Alouettes on the field, or a member of the Alouettes on the field right now. That's got to be my number one thought process more than anything else, is how can I be good enough to get not just get this win in Winnipeg, but go into the bye week with positive momentum? And how can I use that to finish off the season from that point going forward?
Yeah, that's good. I think it's probably the best way to go ahead and end the show. So I hope you guys enjoy the game on Thursday. Enjoy the rest of the CFL action, obviously, too. And again, next week we will make sure that we get our Bad Monkey on try another flavor from the good folks at Bad Monkey Popcorn. So for everybody here at Alouette's Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Kepper. We're on Final Approach.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.